Hello, welcome to Kieroski Conversations with me, Scott Drummond. It's January, and that means the topic I'm exploring in depth is courage. So helping me to explore that topic today is Jai Smith, founder and director of Double Star Creative Studio in Sydney, Australia. Perhaps more importantly, a good buddy of mine. We've known each other for a long time, over a decade, I guess. Stoked to have you on the show, Joe. Like, how would you introduce yourself?
Oh, you know, there was somebody who once snapped me out of it and said, stop introducing yourself by what you do for a job. And since then, I've tried to, although most of the times that doesn't work in a work conversation.
So how would that go?
An interesting. Well, I think for me, it used to be around whatever my hobby was at the time, or actually in the last 2 years, it's probably, hi, I'm Jai. I actually just moved back from Hong Kong 2 years ago. It was a great excuse to have a little humble brag and also say, I need some friends. Do you want to be friends with me?
Nice. And like, it's an instant curiosity starter, right? Somebody's like, oh, yeah. What were you doing in Hong Kong?
Exactly. So it's a bit of pitch magic from an ad man.
Ah, nice. Yeah. So, yeah, talk to me a little bit about where you are right now, what you're up to, what you're doing. And, you know, we'll kind of steer this in the direction of courage, but I'm just curious to figure out where you are and what you're up to.
Look, I'm at a really interesting point in my life. I left Australia, well, almost 13 years ago now, which is crazy. Oh, sorry, almost 10 years ago now, which is crazy to think about.
Wow.
Because I had a very different life. Like, I was climbing a very specific corporate ladder. Like, and I love how everyone says that. Say, don't worry, I had a real job too once. I'm the first person to say, don't start with that. And of course, I started with that.
I was
doing the corporate thing, and it wasn't too corporate, you know, it was public relations. And moved to Hong Kong, and then made a heap of money, and then developed some pretty bad habits around drugs and alcohol, basically blew most of that money, came back, and had to kind of restart my life a little bit. So as of today, I'm 34. I'm about 3 or 4 months out from owning property in Australia, which if you've ever spent any time in Australia, is basically like winning the lottery. By the time, you know, I heard somebody talking about the mansions in Beverly Hills, and I'm like, they are the price of my parents' house. They're just nothing. And my parents are very, very middle class. And I'm like, that is the state of Australian property. But I moved back into that particular property with my parents. So it's a great thing to opening on dates at the moment to say, hey, my name's Joe, I'm 34, and I live at home with my parents. But that's kind of where I am. But also, I run a very successful company. And then I quickly.
Least, right?
Yeah. And then I quickly try and, you know, scramble to say, but I've done all these things, and I don't worry, I'm successful in whatever way the society thinks to validate me. But yeah, I'm an interesting point, but I'm actually very happy. Like, I actually really enjoy living with my parents after being away for so long. And I guess for me, I've finally been able to get a lot of priorities straight. And whether that's me giving into society's, you know, you've got to own a house and run a company to be successful, or maybe I'm actually just very happy and settled. I'm kind of fine either way now.
Super interesting to hear you talk about kind of like society's expectations about what kind of leveling up or growing up looks like, right? You know, getting a house, having a successful career. Has that always been a goal for you? And now you're kind of heading into that territory. Does it resonate? Is that you mentioned that you're content, that you're feeling this sense of being in the right place. Tell me a bit about that.
No, I never wanted those things. In fact, I never thought I'd come home from Hong Kong. I didn't think I'd stay in Hong Kong forever, but I didn't think I needed to get property and get married and move to the suburbs. I still don't think I need to get married and move to the suburbs. But financially, I've never had to worry about money because I've always been paid way too much for some little shit in a PR agency. But now, running my own business, looking after people's incomes, having to be financially responsible for them has taught me to be financially responsible for myself, because basically everything I've earned and owned is on the line for these people. So I never appreciated, and my brother was totally different. My brother has been financially independent, you know, for the last 10 years at least. And he's only a year younger than I am. So there's a certain, I used to just ignore financial responsibility as something I didn't want to worry about because I was quite anxious about it.
Sure.
Anxious about it because I knew I wasn't paying attention. But then once I did some very basic things, I suddenly feel so much better. Like I feel so much more in control of everything else in my life because I don't really have to worry about money as much. And that's not because I'm earning more. In fact, I'm on the same, well, I don't mind sharing this, I'm on the same salary I would have been earning 10 years ago. Like, I mean, it's just, you know, it went skyrocketing high and then came back. And, you know,
yeah.
It's very modest and I'm much happier.
Yeah, and I guess from what you said earlier as well, your outgoings have decreased slightly. Do you want to tell me about that?
Well, I think for me, there are a few things. Drugs and alcohol are incredibly expensive, not only in Australia, but generally around the world. And, you know, I'm at any given time anywhere from, you know, 88 to 95 kilos. And, you know, I'd put away 20 beers in a night. And I don't mean 20 as an exaggeration. I mean 20, quite literally 20.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's $250 here. That's some bars.
Yeah.
And then
I mean, and in Hong Kong, it's probably a down payment on a house, right?
Yeah, well, it's like that. It depends if you go to a Guaylo bar or if you go to a locals bar, but it can go either way. And then, you know, mix that in with, you know, a coke addiction that was costing me. God, I don't like to think about the coke part, but it was you know, a lot.
That's a lot,
you know,
of money right
been,
now, right?
Oh, it would have been hundreds of dollars a week, easy, right?
Yeah,
and. What that does is it's not just that, it's then the hangover. So then the hangover, and then, look, I'm a huge fan of, you know, delivery, don't get me wrong, still. But I mean,
course,
you get three meals the next day on delivery. And
sure,
then, you
sure.
know, I probably was so wasted or hungover, I couldn't really be bothered, you know, cleaning. So then, you know, I'd have a cleaner, you know, sort my life out when I wasn't there. Or, you know, it would have this weird snowball effect over all these other things. On,
right.
on Uber, my God, my Uber bill a month used to be around $1,000 a month, I reckon.
Yeah, well, you've got to have the right salary to afford your Ubers as well in that case, haven't you?
Yeah. So it's suddenly by removing, and I guess that's the bigger context here, is that even over the last 3 years, I've really decreased how much I've drank and how many drugs I've done, but probably more recently, over the last 3 weeks, I've actually stopped. And it's not the first time I've ever stopped. I take about a month off a year. I'm not quite as cliche as the dry January, but I generally take the month off before my birthday.
Nice.
Because I know I'm probably going to go on a bender for my birthday.
Sure.
But this year, I've got a really different focus, I think, for me. And I'm so much more comfortable talking about it now than even when you and I first spoke. But
yeah, great.
I'm looking to take like a year off drinking and drugs come to that as well. And that's not really about, you know, people talk about sobriety as, you know, don't let me come to a bar or don't, you know, put a glass of alcohol to my lips. That's not really what I'm doing. What I'm trying to do is completely change my relationship with alcohol.
So much coming up already. one quick point. I just taking you just going back to, you know, your description of Hong Kong. I want to just ask something about the money question as well, which is, you know, you mentioned sort of certain amount of anxiety around, you know, not taking responsibility for the financial awareness, the financial situation. Do you think there's something in that around, you know, facing up to where you were spending your money would have meant facing up to the lifestyle you were leading, and it wasn't something you wanted to look at?
Definitely. You know, I think it would have been a really big shock in terms of, you know, suddenly going without that lifestyle, like even just for a month or two and having to face, oh, like I've got, you know, all this money going out, you know, I've got credit cards to pay, whatever else. You know, it would have been a bigger light shown on kind of what the real, well, I shouldn't say the root cause, because again, I think what I flip flop is around, well, you know, was I unhappy because I drank, or was I unhappy because I drank, or did I drink because I was unhappy? It's a really hard thing to kind of pull apart.
Yeah.
But I think it was more, I didn't want to look at myself. And I think that financial record was such a black and white account of where my life was at the time.
Right.
And that was probably the sharper. You know, I think the strategist in me wants to draw that link between, you know, having to give up a lifestyle, but I think it was just more I didn't want to examine or reflect on anything that was going on in my life at the time.
And you know, what I get is a sense also now that something shifted, right? Now you're more ready to look at yourself in that way.
Yeah, like, I think having a really hard look at myself, I can't even tell you. There were a few moments when I definitely should have earlier. Like, I can remember those, and I'm like, why didn't I look at it back then? This time around, God. I went and met with a psychiatrist last year, and he was perfect for me because I said to him, I'm not great at talking to psychologists because I end up lying and I end up manipulating what the conversation's about, and suddenly I realize what I've done. Like, I sabotaged the whole thing. And I said to him, look, this is what's going on. I'm actually just more nervous that, you know, there's a bigger mental health thing going on behind the scenes, and I'm not really just focused on it. I'm like, I don't need a diagnosis for you to tell me, like, you know, I find that some people use psychologists and psychiatrists to kind of give them their horoscope. Oh, I'm like this because of X. And I'm like,
yeah.
I know why I'm like the way I am. What I need to know is how bad am I? So I went and had a bunch of, like, health checks done because I was worried about my heart after, you know, what became 10 years of some pretty hard substance abuse. And that was what I was keeping me awake at night. I'm like, I think I'm going to have a heart attack every other day. And what it was incredibly prolonged periods of panic and anxiety.
Right.
And the doctor gave me the all clear, which is good. My bloods came back fine. I was actually in, and I thought I had diabetes at one point. I got a really weird diagnosis when I was in Hong Kong, and turns out I don't. And I'm well pre-diabetic, which is all very good. So, but that stuff frightened the hell out of me. Like, to the point where I kind of had accepted that I was probably going to die and I was okay with that. And that was a really dark, low point. Because I kind of had stepped back. I'm like, you know what? I've had a really good life. I'm okay with this now. I can probably go out and I'll be okay. And that was loneliness. You know, that was me. I don't know if I've said that out loud before.
Yeah. And
that
I
was...
Yeah, I was just going to...
Yeah, that was...
no, I was going to say, I wanted to... that sounds like a pretty bleak place to be, but it also sounds like potentially, you know, it's a chance to hit rock bottom. Do you think you ever did hit rock bottom, or, you know, got to a point where you could then look at yourself honestly, you couldn't lie to yourself anymore, and you sort of said to yourself, okay, I definitely don't want to be like this, I don't know what's next, but some change is necessary?
Yeah, like, it was, you know, there were two specific instances I remember waking up and just hating myself, and I realized that, I actually realized that as lonely as I was lonely because I was trying to make other people happy before myself. And then I got out of every relationship, romantic, platonic, you know, all the casual shit I was doing in between, and just by myself for 6 months. Like, I mean, just didn't enter relationships, you know, had a brutal honesty with people, and that's something I had never done before. And I realized that loneliness was really just a part of me. And it sounds so cliche sometimes, but like that whole idea of not being happy with yourself, it was more pronounced about that. It was like, I just didn't like myself. Like, I didn't want to be around myself. And so by forcing myself into this solitude, and that's kind of why I enjoyed going home so much, is that, you know, I just made myself happy every day. You know, I had stopped playing guitar as regularly. Like, I played, you know, maybe once every 3 or 4 months, and just started playing for half an hour a day. And, you know, I got back into my fitness. And then, again, everything I did, I just do it by myself because that's what I wanted to do. And I had a bit of a glimmer of, oh, wow, this actually works. And then at the end of that 6 months, I was sort of back where I was. I was half in a couple of different relationships. I was drinking too much. I was kind of doing this thing where I'd go out for a week and I'd need to hibernate for a week. And like that was kind of how I was like almost tiptoeing back into it. And then at Christmas, I didn't answer your question before, specifically with rock bottom. Rock bottom happened to me a couple of times, but you don't really know how low you can get. And I mean, there are things that are terrifying, that are situations I've been in where I'm like, holy shit, this is rough bottom. But they
save those for the autobiography, right?
Yeah, that's
going to be a wild
maybe
read,
never for
I
that
guarantee
one.
It. That's going to be a wild read.
Well, actually, you know, it's funny you say that because I am trying to put my memory back together because I also can't remember years of my life. So I think you saw me posting on Twitter looking for old diaries. So I'm trying to find people who have got a diary from 2012 to 2018 because I can't remember really 2014, 15, and 16. I can't remember those years.
Mm.
And so I'm going back through all my photos and I'm a prolific, you know, iPhone photographer and a decent photographer, but like my happy snaps through my phone. So I'm going through and trying to reassign memories to them and you know, back journal my life because I can't remember shit. And then coming up to Christmas, I spent Christmas Eve just getting blind drunk by myself in a bar. Like, I mean, just trying to write myself off. And I kind of realized that it was the last drink for a while, and I was just a bit annoyed because my original plans had fallen through, so I'm like, fuck it, I'll just go to a bar by myself.
You're like, if this is my last chance, I'm not going home to just have an early night, I'm gonna drink, right?
Yeah, and so then, you know, I probably drank I started at 11, I finished at 1, and, you know, that would have been $1,000 night by the time I finished up. At least would have been a couple hundred dollars in Ubers, just, you know, bar hopping different bars and whatever else. And I knew, but also at then I woke up the next day on Christmas knowing that I just made a decision that week that I was going to give it up for a year.
Mm.
And I didn't want to start on New Year's because I just don't think it's a good time to start.
Nah, you're there, I reckon.
Yeah, just insane. And so then, yeah, I actually, my last drink was on, my last little session was actually on Boxing Day, and I just went out with my brother and just, you know, had a, I feel safe drinking with him. It's a bit of a different relationship I have with him versus other people. But I think I even wrote this down in my phone somewhere before I started journaling after your advice. But having made the decision, I felt so empowered. Like I thought I was going to feel miserable, but I felt amazing just 2 days after. And you have massive, massive crashes after you stop drinking. And doing any kind of substance, like you crash at days 6, 7, and 8 are pretty rough. And then today's day 23 or 24, and yeah, it's just I just feel like a whole new person.
Listen, man, it's so good to hear you kind of actually specifically speak about the amazing feeling you had when you really committed to going all in on cutting alcohol for the year. What role do you think courage has played in this shift in your life?
The biggest place for me in courage is changing my relationships with everybody. So, you know, if you want to hang out with, you know, Jai, you go to a pub and Jai will meet you there. Jai will be there.
Yeah, right.
Suddenly telling everyone, and, you know, that not that I'm never going to drink again because, you know, I do intend to, you know, have a glass of wine now and again because it is something I want to conquer my relationship with alcohol. You know, someone told me a great analogy. It's like one of you has got to be the master, and for the last 10 years or 15 or even 20 years, you know, alcohol's been the master, and that's what I'm trying to flip.
But right, yeah, and you spoke about having, you know, improving the relationship between you and alcohol, not cutting alcohol out of your life completely, right?
Exactly, and I think that's a very modern or contemporary version of sobriety versus the traditional, you know,
temperance or
the, yeah, abstinence is ill, abstaining, is that I, you know, I would love to have, you know, a glass of wine, but like, you know, if I'm going to do that once a month, not every week. So like, for me, the courage is about saying to, you know, especially your guy friends who want to go to the pub, although pubs in Australia now have non-alcoholic beer, and it is a life-changing drink. And I don't mean the Carlton and the Heineken, but,
yeah,
you know, obviously big shout-out to Andy Miller and Heaps Normal, but there's so many other great ones, and I mean,
yep,
they take the edge off, you feel like you're a part of it. But also, I love beer. I fucking love beer. And the courage to say to the guys at the bar, like, oh, you know, what have you got in non-alcoholic beer? Or, you know, going on a date and, you know, having to say, or, you know, saying to, you know, a woman or a girl and saying, you know, hey, I'd love to go on a date with you, but, you know, actually I've stopped drinking for the year. There's probably nothing more terrifying you could say in Australian culture. Like, Australian culture is built on pubs. And I love it. Like, I'm not going to pretend I don't love it, but... It's if you don't drink, people don't trust you. And my brother put it the best. Like, he said, it's amazing that the first time you uttered this to me and we were having a beer, he's like, I felt, I've got to use the word he used because he made it really good. He's like, I felt betrayed, but also attacked. He's like, I wanted to defend. He's like, and he's quite good at, you know, self-examining those kind of feelings. He's like, he laughs. He's like, isn't that amazing that that's what our culture does to us? That he's the one who feels attacked because I'm not drinking. That somehow, like, I've impacted him by not drinking.
And right. It's like a moral judgment on the choices he's making in his life, right?
I think that's what it is. But I also think it's about losing a mate, you know, like, obviously we're still friends. But there have been times when I would say, oh, well, let's hang out, and suddenly we can't have a beer, and then it's like, well, what do we do? But actually, that's been a really hard conversation, and I've needed the courage to say, all right, well, let's go and have breakfast. Now, saying that out loud now sounds fine, because guess what? I get up at 5 every morning, and I'm a morning person. But
sure,
the first few times I had to say that was really, really confronting.
Yeah, I can imagine. And have you found yourself in the situation where you're out with a girlfriend or somebody that you're seeing, and you kind of had to have that conversation with them? Where, because I guess as you're stepping into this phase, this next year, this becomes a part of who you are, your identity. And previously, like you said, you know, your identity has been like larger than life, the life of the party, Action Jackson, like, let's go out and let's get it on. And now there's a bit of a shift in the identity. Have you had a chance to kind of, I guess, like, have you been playing around with what that introduction sounds like now?
Not as much, you know. I think, you know, the person I'm seeing at the moment is aware of what I'm doing and is incredibly supportive. In the middle, it kind of made a few dates interesting, like but I think I was just less engaged in those as well. So the short answer is no. But I think what it became about is I kind of wanted to bring people the things I actually wanted to do. So, like, you know, I hung out with my friends and, you know, I just brought her to CrossFit with me. And, you know, she's just started, so that was a bit of fun. But I'm like, oh, that was actually really interesting. I never would have done that. I would have said, you know, let's go to Newtown and get hammered over lunchtime after the gym. Like, you know, I'll go to the gym and then I'll come see you.
Right.
But
so it sounds like it's opened up a lot more opportunity for you in terms of the way that you can relate with other people.
Like, I hope so. I think what it does is I definitely think I'll lose a couple of friends, not because I want to or because they're disappointed in me. I think because there wasn't a real friendship there. And if you drink, sometimes you just want somebody else to drink with.
Right.
You know, a lot of people I'll go just drink and happy silence with, and we'll have a great time. But it kind of reminds you who your real friends are. And I think it just helps me focus on the relationships that I actually want to invest in.
Right. And yeah, and listen, earlier you mentioned, you know, the main relationship that you want to invest in by the sounds of it is the relationship you have with yourself, right?
Exactly. And I think that, you know, talking about the courage, it's really taking stock of who you are and what you want to do. And I think the most interesting thing is that, you know, I still make 100 mistakes, and I'm still fairly critical of myself, but I think even just now, you know, almost a month sober, I have so much more clarity to give myself perspective on my own actions. Mm. So, like, I was kind of taking stock for last year, and I'm like, oh, I shouldn't have done this, shouldn't have done that, you know, or maybe if I'd done this, it would have been better. It would be a lot harder, and I think it would just spiral down if I wasn't, you know, taking such a strong approach to being sober and looking at myself. I think I wouldn't have the clarity or the comfort to let things go. You know, while right. I think alcohol and drugs kind of help you forget about things, you don't let them go. You just kind of block them out. Whereas what you right. really need to do is process and deal with them and kind of move on. And so, you know, even last week, you know, I really settled with myself a lot of things and reconciled a lot of things. And I had to say, yeah, I did that. But you know what? That really doesn't matter in the big scheme of things. The consequences are so minor. You know, who cares? Move on. And that's pretty unheard of.
Yeah. And, you know, that to me is a real show of courage, right? Like, most of the time what we do, I heard somebody memorably describe this as, like, some people just go through life walking into rooms, taking a shit, and then walking out and letting somebody else clean it up. It's probably an Australian I heard it from. It's pretty colorful, but, you know, part of like, if you look at sort of Ken Wilber and his sort of work, part of growing up is like cleaning up, right? And it takes courage to look back at the stuff that it takes courage to look back at the stuff that we've done, especially the stuff where, you know, the person we were being at that time was just like, oh, just terrible, terrible human being at that time. To look back at that with an attitude of sort of compassion, right? An attitude of friendliness almost, and to not judge ourselves for who we were, you know, when we were at our worst, but just to make peace with that version of ourselves, all the mistakes we made, and, you know, not stay trapped in that place of guilt and shame. That takes huge courage, huge courage.
Yeah, it's there's a lot of courage, I think, or there's a lot of need for courage in looking where you don't want to look. You know, there's that, I say it at work a lot, like, you know, don't ask the questions you don't want the answers to. And suddenly I feel that's very, using that to apply for, you know, real life is not a good idea.
Yeah, I was going to say, are you starting to regret asking people to ask themselves those questions now that you're having to ask them of yourself?
I think you want to ask yourself the questions when you're ready, and if you can help, if you can help other people, then it helps. There's a huge part of it. People will help themselves when they're ready, and if you can be there to help guide them through it, then do it. I think the thing that maybe tires me, and this happened recently with a friend, is every week she'd just come into to the gym and say, "I'm done drinking for the week." But I mean, every week, you know, for the next, I'm taking the next two weeks off. And sometimes, like, it just gets to a point. I'm like, "Well, just do it. Like, stop talking about it and just do it." And one of my big things was I didn't start talking about this till I was 2 weeks in already. And that was quite important to me because I just kind of need to do this for myself rather than tell somebody else. And there's a huge, you know, some people say, no, you know, what you should be doing is telling somebody to hold you accountable, but make sure the person you're telling will actually hold you accountable. If it's your partner, you probably won't. They're going to be the most forgiving. And if it's just a friend who you see at the gym, then they probably won't either because they just see you at the gym. Like, who's going to hold you? Who are you actually going to listen to?
I love that. It really chimes with something I heard the other day from a friend, Johnny, talking about, you know, who are your challenge partners in life? Who's the group of people that you surround yourself with that are going to call you on your bullshit, that are going to challenge you when you're living too far away from your values or the life that you want to lead, you know, and they aren't necessarily, you know, sure, they may be close friends, but they're also the kind of people that can see clear-eyed, you know, what you're up to and aren't afraid, you know, they have the courage, I guess, to confront you and what you're doing. Do you feel like you have that group of people in your life now?
No, I rely on myself for that, and I'm pretty adamant about that. And I don't know why. I think maybe because no one has ever been able to talk me out of most things. I'm incredibly stubborn, but I think that's the kind of stuff that I had to kind of really deal with myself, is that, if I'm going to be that stubborn, if I'm going to be the contrarian, if I'm going to be, if I want to be, I consider myself, not a leader, but, like, I do what I want to do, really. Like, I am very selfish like that. But I think coming to terms with, I can be selfish if I take responsibility, and that is a huge wake up for me. It's like, okay, you want to be, bit of a lone wolf on this stuff. You want to be a bit of a lone ranger, then you need to be responsible for yourself. It doesn't work the other way.
Right, yeah, you can't have your cake and eat it. You can't be the lone wolf and then have people ride in to rescue you.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. So I feel like I've put you really on the spot in this conversation, Jai. So I wanted to like at least open up a space, to flip it, and I wondered if you had any questions for me about courage.
Why did you want to look at courage this month? What was it about courage?
Great question, man. Great question. I'm really glad you're leading with that one, because I guess, it speaks to courage itself, right? So a question I asked myself a while ago, I journal pretty prolifically. I don't mean to brag or anything, but I'm a pretty prolific journaler. But in my journaling practice, every now and then I return to the same topic, which is about telling the truth to yourself, the journaling that I do is kind of expressive writing or stream of consciousness, morning pages sort of thing, Julia Cameron, the artist's way. And so you just write kind of stream of consciousness for half an hour every morning. And sometimes I'll have a prompt, and the prompts that I've been exploring of late are a few. One is, what am I afraid to admit to myself? Another one is, when was the last time I chose the truth over a lie? And the one that kind of prompted me to lean into courage is, like, what is a lie I'm currently telling myself? I was exploring these, and horrible questions to ask yourself. You just really end up in some pretty gnarly places with those questions. But a great chance to surface some of the stuff that's just beneath the surface. And so this would have been back in probably October. What's the truth I haven't shared yet? Or when was the last time I chose the truth over a lie? And I really started to reflect, like, a big part of my identity over the last, 5 or 6 years at least, maybe even more than that, has been that I'm a dad. I'm a really passionate dad. I care so much about being a dad, and I've actively taken that identity on. So much so, we talked about how we introduce ourselves, our bios. Usually I introduce myself by saying I'm a dad and a husband, and then only then do I start talking about any projects I'm involved in. And that was a conscious choice, right, to really step in and say, like, I'm a dad. And, I love being a father so much. I coach fathers. I'm fascinated by fatherhood and the experience. I see it as an incredible kind of crucible in which we can be forged, shaped in really interesting ways. And I want to explore that with my clients. And part of the truth that I had to confront is that I was kind of lying to myself by just accepting that I was okay with being the dad and that being my identity.
Yeah.
And in truth, the big part that was missing for me was, more connection to my work and more chance to kind of grow my work. And dare I say it, a word that I've had a really conflicted relationship with during my whole life, like ambition. What's my ambition? What do I want to put out into the world? What do I want to create? And, even saying those words now, there's still a little tremble in them, because it was like, well, if you have to create something and put it out into the world, then you're going to invite the judgment, right? See, and that for me really sits in this difficult space of, wanting to get everything right, wanting to be the perfectionist, wanting to be, unimpeachable in terms of the work I do, and that's been with me my whole life. That's one of my kind of saboteurs that I have that's pretty active and healthy in me. And so what I kind of realized in my questioning myself, like, what's a lie I'm telling myself? The lie is, like, it's okay, you know, for me to be focused on the dad stuff, you know, because in truth, I think the dad stuff is both, I love it and I'm passionate about it and I care deeply about my role as a dad, but also I was hiding from putting my stuff out into the world and being more creative because I was scared of judgment. I was scared of being judged.
Yeah.
And being judged harshly, right? And to be honest, you know, for those of you out there who have a little bit of a perfectionist going on, really kind of, you know, it's an incredibly fragile place to be. You know, on the outside, maybe looking in, people think, wow, you know, he's really good. He's doing great work. Yeah, he seems really confident. And the truth is you're just brittle. You know, one tiny word from somebody makes you crumble. And, you know, basically I'd gone on long enough kind of finding ways to stop myself getting exposed to criticism. You know, because when you say, oh, what do you do? I'm a dad. You know, people don't usually shoot back, oh, that's a cop-out, mate. What do you do for work? You know, instead they have to say, oh, that's great. You know, it's tremendous that you lean into that role. It's fantastic, right? No one's calling you on that, right? Nobody. So I had to call myself out on it and say, listen, I love being a dad. It's a big part of who I am, but it's not everything I want to be. And so, you know, part of that for me was then, right, what do I need to do in order to get in motion around the things that I'm stuck on? You know, listen, I'm a coach, right? I coach other people on this stuff. But as is so often the case, you know, working with my own coach helped me really to feel more courageous around this stuff. And I had this beautiful moment. I know that you're familiar with the hero's journey, Joseph Campbell's kind of monomyth describing how we journey or adventure through our lives and how we develop insights into our subconscious and bring those back into consciousness. You know, I had this moment where I woke up on a Thursday morning and I had a couple of coaching calls and I had a call with my own coach. And I woke up in the morning. I said, I'm going to go to the woods today. And literally, I mean, I don't know where the thought came from, right? Because there's no woods near me. It's a 40-minute drive to the woods that I ended up going to. But I literally woke up and I said, I'm going to the woods today. And you know, so I was like, I went downstairs at breakfast. I said to Carla, I'm going to the woods today. And she sort of looked at me like, okay, what's that all about? I said, I don't know. I'm just going to go to the woods. I'm going to do my coaching calls from the woods. And then, you know, I'm just going to go to the woods. You know, we've been married 17 odd years now. So she sort of just looked at me with that look like, okay, sure, whatever you got to do, man. Just like come back. You know. And so I went into the woods, right? And I tell you what, the instant I stepped into the woods, like the second I stepped in, it was like the energy in my body shifted entirely. I felt so at home. I felt so kind of held, and I felt really, you know, I couldn't identify it as such at the time, but it was like confidence, right? Or courage. I was like, from this place, you know, surrounded by these trees and in this space, I'm ready to do whatever I need to do, right? And so anyway, I'm wandering through the woods, you know, I ended up sitting down. I did one coaching call with a client. I had such a great energy when I was in the woods. The coaching call went really well. And I thought, you know, there might be something in this being in the woods thing, you know? And then as I was journaling for myself, you know, I kind of had all these little signs and signals popping up around me. You know, one of them was a robin came down and landed on this tree stump, like 4 foot away from me, like a little robin bopping around. Red breath, looking awesome, man. I'm in the woods, the light streaming through. It's like an incredible scene anyway. But this was like a heightened experience, you know, and I'm not usually one for I don't read into my dreams. I don't really, you know, see signs and wonders around the place. But it was like everything was pretty elevated at this moment. And there's robins bopping around. And I was like, man, there was something in that. Like, it sounds weird to say even now, but there was definitely something in that interaction that I had. So I went and started looking around. Yeah. Sure enough, the robin, you know, in all sorts of different, you know, whether it's pagan wisdom systems or whether it's like Native American Indian systems, the robin has a significance as a spirit guide. It's often a spirit guide that leads us to our spirit animal, in fact, in North American Indian traditions. And, you know, the robin in Christian mythology has this kind of really curious thing. Like, so the story goes how the robin got its red breast is the robin flew down and alighted on Christ's head when he was being crucified and plucked a thorn out of him. how the robin got its red breast is, as it was plucking the thorns out of Christ's thorned crown, it's got its chest pierced, and that's how the legend goes.
Mm.
So what you have is this bird with tremendous courage, you know, that is synonymous with people taking a step forward into their fullest self, right? And I just had this, you know, I was in the woods, this robin's hanging out, I'm almost tripping out, right? I'm not on any drugs, but I'm just so high on the sense of connection, you know. And in that moment, I realized, right, I'm on the threshold here. You know, I'm no longer in the Shire. You know, for whatever reason, I woke up this morning. For whatever reason, right, yeah. I woke up this morning and decided to walk out of the Shire and go to the woods, right? So I get to the threshold, and I'm there, and I'm literally thinking to myself, shit, you know, I'm taking that step. I'm going to decide for myself that whatever's been holding me back, right, whatever's been stopping me, that fear of being judged, you know, the fear of being out of control, you know, that's another big one that's sitting there for me. I'm just going to, you know, I'm going to face it. And this was my initiation, right? This was my moment where I stepped across the threshold. And so since then, I've just been really looking for ways to continue to confront the things that are causing me fear or anxiety, and not confront them in a sort of heroic way, like, I'm going to destroy you because you're a fear of mine, but just get curious about it. And so...
Sorry to cut you off, but is that, like, more looking at... is that like readjusting your environment to look at the same things differently rather than necessarily knowing what you're going looking for?
There's a little bit of both, actually. So certainly it's about having the courage to look at my life right now and see it for what it is. You know, do I like it? What do I want to do about it? You know, if something isn't where I want it to be, you know, I'm not just going to accept that, right? I'm going to have the courage to aim for more, you know, to strive for more, to kind of live a life more thrilling, a life less ordinary, right? But there's also a piece in there around creating a better life for myself, right? So this is, and I think in a way, this is the bit that, you know, this is the bit that's perhaps the most, has been the most confronting or scary in a way, is saying, okay, I'm going to actually fully put myself out there. You know, I'm not just going to, you know, noodle around the edges, be happy to have a bit of work here, a bit of work there, you know, enjoy the work that I do, but not really go big, you know, for fear of falling flat on my face. Well, you know, now my ambition is totally different. Now my ambition is, right, like, how can I fall flat on my face, right? I'm actively thinking about, okay, where do I feel my comfort zone is right now? And what can I do to explore that range of, you know, of what's allowed for me at this stage, right? Like, yeah, do I feel comfortable singing in public? No, not particularly. Like, I'll do it usually if I've got a skinful inside of me. I'm a legendary karaoke participant, but, you know, I've got a drug affair by that point. So, like, I did this such a silly, like, I call it a courage experiment, because it is literally just like playing around with stuff. So I went down onto the beach the other day and I sung a song out loud, and like just sitting there on the beach singing. And just, you know, obviously a bunch of people just looking at you like, you're a fucking idiot. What's this idiot doing? He's just singing really loudly. Like, I'm trying to have a conversation here. There's this guy singing this song. But for me, you know, it was an act of, like, that felt courageous, you know. And listen, you know, there's far more courageous things happening every single day around the world. You know, people confronting, you know, tremendous injustice. Like today, for example, is Martin Luther King Jr. Day, right? So if we want to, like, put courage in its grandest context, we can start to talk about that. But what I'm realizing is, you know, courage is a very personal thing, right? Courage is confronting whatever the fear is that you're experiencing right now, you know, and acting in the face of that fear. So I don't care if, you know, for you, courageous is like getting out the house, right? For some people, that's a massive courageous act, you know, and I don't want to kind of have some scale of courageous activity where, like, that gets denigrated or put down because somebody else is doing more. You know, I'm not interested in that. I'm just interested in how fiercely and how bravely or courageously are people, you know, exploring their own life, and through that exploration, kind of giving themselves more choice in what they want to do. And, like, you know, I want that for my clients so much. And do you know what? I want it for myself even more. So it's kind of, you know, it's definitely a selfish motivation, but there's a real value. You know, and what I'm starting to learn is the more you explore the topic, the more you realize courage is really multifaceted.
Yeah.
You know, there's just a lot in it. There's like moral courage, physical courage, there's mental courage, there's the courage to persevere in the face of adversity. Like, you can name 1,000 different types of courage. And yeah, that's what's so fascinating about this topic and why, you know, I picked it to explore, you know, in January specifically, but for me, it's like the word I'm holding on to for the whole year.
Yeah, yeah. And it's interesting, like, it's very scalable. Like, some things are big, some things are small. And I really like that angle of it.
Yeah, and you know what?
Yeah,
that's
amazing.
What will be courageous tomorrow, right, will feel very different to what will be courageous today. You know, and as you go on, you know, in that sense, I think it's really like a muscle, right? The more you flex your courage muscle, you know, if you're training in the right way, the more you're kind of building that muscle, and the more you can lift, right? The more you can do with that courage muscle. So suddenly, you know, where your comfort zone or where you felt, you know, safe, and where fear wasn't present and therefore courage wasn't needed, you know, maybe that, you know, that's on a scale of 1 to 10, that's a 5, right? Well, the more experiments you do on the edge of that, the more you start to push that
boundary back.
You know, and
I love that idea that, like, there's different levels and that you should be playing with those different levels. It's like physical training, right? You don't just go hard out all the time. You've got to do different levels of training, different combinations. You know, sometimes you're going to be up, sometimes you're going to be down. If you want different outcomes, then there's probably a different way of training that particular courage muscle to make it work.
Right, absolutely, man, absolutely. And that's why I loved it when you were talking about kind of, you know, and I guess the question that came to mind for me is, like, you know, what's scary right now in your life? And then my invitation around that is to sort of, you know, and, you know, you don't need to share on the podcast. There's no need to do that. It's not about, you know, like, bearing our soul. But an invitation for everybody listening as well is to have a think about, like, what's scary in your life right now? And what is it costing you when that fear is in control? Right. And then what is a really kind, friendly and kind of compassionate way that you can explore the edge of that scariness, not like heroically dive over the cliff, you know, and end up beaten up and battered and bruised on the other side, you know, and then retreat back, you know, traumatized. But how can we really gently start to explore, you know, what's going on for ourselves at that, where comfort becomes discomfort as a way of growing what's possible for us?
Yeah. No, I think that's bang on. I think, you know, courage with a goal, or courage with a mission is really what I'm taking away from that. And I think that's about knowing, you know, how to use courage tactfully in terms of, you know, which tool is appropriate for which kind of outcome or output.
Yeah. And you know, one thing I really love that what you said brought up for me is also like that knowledge when you've been training really hard, when it's time for active recovery, right? It's not time for more time in the gym or building more muscle. It's time to chill the fuck out. But it's in that downtime that the real muscle gets built, right? The what we know about the brain, for example, and neuroplasticity, you know, the ability of the brain to wire itself and rewire itself and, you know, grow in that sense and change, is that you can be involved in like a deep kind of learning or a hugely engaging experience, you know, an experience with a very high level of arousal in the brain. But what we understand now from neurobiology is that's not actually the time when the neuroplasticity happens, right? That's when there's a huge amount of arousal in the brain. Actually, when the neuroplasticity happens, when the brain rewires, takes place when we sleep or when we're involved in the deep period of rest. So this kind of like, it, to some extent, is why like the hustle culture is so flawed, because you know, hustle, do more. But if we don't do the downtime, right, that's actually where we learn in the downtime. It doesn't feel like where we're learning, but it's actually where that kind of neurobiological process is taking place that's growing us, that's, you know, that's helping us. And so I love this idea of like, and you know, in my head, I'm actually, you know, now picturing you in the CrossFit gym, right? CrossFit strikes me as this brilliant analogy for a really versatile kind of mixed approach, you know, holistic fitness thing going on, right? And so I wondered, I mean, you're a CrossFitter. Like, does that resonate, or have I gone down a strange rabbit hole here?
No, I think you're right. I think the difference is you get coached into it, right? So I think what you've said is really good. Like, what I would love to see, you know, as a bit of as an output is, like, imagine if you could create 30 days of courage, and it's 30 different variants on what those types of courage might be with built-in rest days. Like, so if you knew Sunday was always for yourself and for rest and reflection, but Monday was where you tried something, you know, that was routine courage, whereas something on a Friday would be something that's out of routine courage. And, you know, you could give each day a courage rating and then, you know, gave people 30 days of courage.
Like, what are we waiting for? This is ready to go, man. Let's just build this shit.
Let's write the book. Let's sell the thing.
It's like, oh shit, I think we just found ourselves in like online course hell. But yeah, I'm with you, man.
Yeah, that's exactly what just happened, isn't it?
But you know what's so true about what you said, John? You know, is it's all of our work to do, right? You know, it's not that we have to do it. Like, no one's saying if you don't do this work, you will be a terrible human or you will fail or whatever. But I love, there's this quote I really, really love by, I think Anae Nin is an author, a diarist. And this quote, like, for me, really expresses it all, which is, life shrinks or expands in proportion to one's courage.
Wow.
And I just
wow, that's really heavy. I like that.
Yeah, because and you know, in answer to your question about me, like, I felt like, you know, I was really comfortable where I was, and you know, I love my life. I'm very fortunate. I've got lots to be grateful for. But also, my life wasn't growing. It was kind of not shrinking too much, but it just staying in stasis, right? And courage is like when you start really stepping out into courage, you know, pushing your boundaries a bit, then there's real growth, right? And I really love this idea that life shrinks or expands in proportion to our courage.
Mm. I love it. I'm going to write that down.
Yeah, well, I mean, it strikes me, you know, about the steps you're taking as well, man. You know, you're talking about this like, this next stage is almost like, you know, stepping into a new identity, or at least stepping into a version of yourself that you haven't, it's a different version of you than the one people know, right? And in that very real sense, you know, you're embracing this courageous step forward into a new chapter or a new piece, you know, in your life. And, you know, there's massive opportunity there too. You know, like, there's a lot of stuff that's opening up in front of you. And I think you're right to say, you know, along the way, some people are going to come with you and some won't, right?
Yeah, and that's it. And I think the more self-reliant you are, the more you're accepting of that. And I think that's the point.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I mean, listen, we're pretty much coming up to our like hour long level. I reckon an hour is a good amount of time. But but I wanted to ask, like, what's next? You know, what's next for you in terms of like what you're showing up for with courage in your life? Like, obviously you've got this.
Well,
like, how many days are you at now? Like 23, 24 days?
Yeah, about that. I'm just keeping up with the journey, and thank you for that. And that's pretty confronting for me, to be honest, even though it's, you know, a couple sentences a day, or maybe it's a paragraph a day. That's very confronting. But I think it's as I roll into, you know, once this is more of a routine of, you know, not drinking every weekend, and, you know, it's about exploring new things. And it's funny you mentioned the woods before, because all week I've been kidding out, and, you know, I love toys, it's not a big secret. So I've been looking at going out into nature myself. Like, I just picked out my new swag. I'm actually,
nice.
You know, I drive a little VW Golf, you know, which is perfect for the city. I'm probably going to switch that out for a Jeep, and, you know, just make some really big changes to actually go out and, you know, fulfill some of these new things I want to do, because they take work, and going to the pub is easy and there's a routine, but changing, you know, the equipment in my life to be able to do the things I want to do is really the next step. And I think financially it's, you know, continuing just to put away a bit more money so I can get my mortgage together, but at the same time be really smart about what I'm saving for. So just just taking really good stock of what I'm doing every day. But it is, again, like those terrible cliches, but the reason they're cliches is because they're big truths, is that I am just dealing with one day at a time and just waking up every day and just setting myself a few goals and just doing that.
I love it, man. I just want to give you a big shout out. Like, it's one thing to kind of go out on this journey, you know, confronting the things that you're confronting, but it's also like fabulous that you're here talking about it, right? That you're sharing your story as well. I just know there's going to be a ton of people for whom just taking that first step is really difficult. You know, they're having to confront some of the things that you've had to confront, and you know what? Maybe they won't have the courage to do it. But like, I just know that, you know, from personal experience dealing with my own shit, that sometimes all it takes is hearing somebody else's story to know that that's possible for you too. So I just want to say a massive thank you to you for coming on and sharing. It's lovely to catch up, as always, mate. I can't wait until we get to hang out in the bush.
Yep. we'll have to do it for sure once all this nonsense is over. I've got to get up to England soon, actually. Like, I'm dying. There's so many people I need to go and see, including yourself. So I'll make sure that happens either over here or up there.
Mate, amazing. Jai, thank you so much for your time. Buddy, before you head off, like, where can people find you? Where can they learn more about you? Where can they connect with you and just shout out to how awesome you are?
Best place is Instagram and Twitter, and I'm just at Jai Smith on both of those things. And yeah, I'm posting a lot more about my little journey and just different things. So they're the best places.
Awesome, mate. Jai, thank you so much, buddy, and go well.
Thank you, dude. I'll talk to you soon.
Bye, mate.
Bye, mate.